Welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Techno Wizard, Techno Shaman, and Hardcore Futurist of the Cool Stuff too. Saturday, April 13th. Saturday, April 13th, 5:47 p.m. 2024. Almost ran into a tree. I like this tree, but these branches always just be drooping and falling all over the place whenever there's some wind. But yeah, coming back to talk some more. I wanted to talk about Risk of Rain 2, some gaming stuff, and then maybe even get back on my rant about hip hop, because that was pretty fun. But I have yet more thoughts. But we'll see what I get to today. I don't want to spend too long. Just because I just did an episode yesterday? plus, I am a little hungry. I should have got some food before I started. But now I'm already started walking. I don't want to walk back just to eat. So, it's whatever. Today has been a pretty chill day. This is like my first Saturday in a long, long time where I don't really have anything to do. Like, I don't have any prior, stuff to do, scheduled items or anything like that. I enjoy, hanging out with folks and doing stuff and all that stuff, all that good stuff. But it's important to take time for yourself, So I was like, I'm going to take the time while I have it and just relax, just take the time for myself. So I've been pretty much gaming all day. And it's been pretty nice. And yes, I have been playing Risk of Rain 2 almost exclusively. So I mentioned this game before with the little spider web got on me. I mentioned this game before. Those that don't know, Risk of Rain 2 is essentially a roguelike game, which basically means that you pick your character and you go through a series of stages and you go as far as you can. And you pick up a bunch of items that are randomized each time, and you have to, just survive, get to the end, or beat the boss, or loop through, or whatever. Whenever you die, you start over. And I never really thought I'd like this type of game. Like, I've heard of roguelikes for a while, but the idea of just like losing your progress every time you die, I hate that. Like, or I thought I'd hate that, because I don't really like hard games. I'm not a fan of like Dark Souls or any of the Souls-like types of games. I don't really like the idea of difficulty just for difficulty's sake. Like, don't get me wrong, I like challenge and stuff like that. But what I find is that for me personally, what I really enjoy in a game is the complexity, right? The idea that you can put together a lot of different things, or that you can learn different techniques or whatever to put together some complex kind of combinations or concepts or whatever. I think that's the reason why I like the type of games I like. Like what I was mentioning before in terms of, what was the other one? How I forget already, the magic game. Goodness, I already forgot the name of the game. But the magic game I was playing before, and the bulwark game I was mentioning as well. I haven't picked that one up beyond the demo yet, but I might do so after I, if I ever get tired of Risk of Rain. I probably will, because it does get frustrating sometimes. But anyways, Risk of Rain 2, that's the gist of it, it's a roguelike. But what makes it special in my heart is a couple things. One, the 3D design. I like 3D games. A lot of roguelikes are 2D or 2.5D or top-down or whatever. Not my jam. Just not. I just like moving in three dimensions. I think it's fantastic. It's really fun. It's really engaging. So I love that. Another aspect of it is like sci-fi magic, science fantasy type of stuff. right? Like the abilities you have. It's not a simple run and gunner. Like you don't just have guns. In fact, most of the characters don't even have guns, right? They have all these cool abilities that basically feel like magic, but it's technically, you know, some sort of sci-fi. And it's really fun, you know? I love that. I love that a lot about science fiction or science fantasy, if you want to call it that. Personally, my type of sci-fi is the type that is indistinguishable from magic. So that's pretty cool. And she's gone. Okay, sorry. There's this kid going on the scooter. I was like, am I in their way? I tried to move it to the side, but then they crossed. Anyways. But yeah, so yeah, I like the science fantasy of it. I like the abilities and stuff like that. Another aspect I like about it is the art style. It's a fairly simplistic art style, but I love stylistic, you know, kind of art, and it does have its own style, its own character. So that's another point that drew me to it. That's one of the reasons, that and the 3D stuff and the science fantasy stuff is the reason why I bought the game, and I heard a lot about it before, but I haven't played it for years. Like I bought it like years ago, but I just haven't played it. Part because I didn't have a whole lot of time to be playing games before, and part because, like I said, it was a roguelike. I bought it and I was like, I'll try it out, but I never prioritized it. But yeah. And another thing that I really enjoy about the game, especially as I began playing, is the complexity. In terms of like the abilities that you have, even though there's only like maybe 5 abilities per character, the way that you can put things together in different ways with the items is just amazing, just truly fantastic. It makes every run feel very different, and it's just amazing how that happens. So a big part of the game is items, right? Is that every you have to basically pick up chests, or there's chests and on each map, and you have to pay money. As you defeat an enemy, you get gold or whatever, you get some money, and then you can use that money to open chests, and those chests have items, right? And there's what, 3 tiers of items. There's a common white, uncommon green, and then I forgot what the other one is, rare I guess, kind of a red item, and there's also equipment that you can get, which is basically like another type of item, but it's like more active, whereas the other items, most other items you get are like passives, but it takes passives to a whole nother level, so I wouldn't even call it passive. But anyways, so these items are like amazing. Like they have a lot of them have interesting abilities, especially when chained together. They call it procced. A lot of people, you know, when you get into like the verbiage of these types of games, they have all types of crazy names for stuff. But basically, different abilities and different things and stuff like that can come together. So, for instance, you might have let's take a simple thing like more bleed, right? So there's an item you can get that gives you 10% chance to put bleed on the enemy. And bleed means they're, you know, bleeding. They lose. It's damage over time, right? But with some character... Oh, gosh. Golly. So something just flew like right almost into my mouth. Luckily, it just hit my chin. But yeah, that was... that was funny. So yeah, you might start stacking bleed on people because certain characters, they also cause bleed. Like Bandit, like he has his ability called hemorrhage, where if you hit somebody with it, it puts bleed on them. But you can stack this damage over time condition, right? So if you have an item that casts bleed plus your attack that casts bleed or that causes bleed, then now you have 2 stacks of bleed, right? But then you can get multiple items of the same type. Like, you can get the same item multiple times and stack them on top. So now you have like 50 bleed or whatever. Like, it gets crazy. And that's just a super simple item, right? Some of the more like the uncommon ones or the rare ones, you know, like one of my favorites, pretty much everyone's favorite in the game, is ukulele, right? Freaking ukulele. And it's funny because, like, when you pick up an item, usually it tells you what it does. But for ukulele, when you pick it up, it just says, and it was electric or something like that. Like, it's not in a full sentence, it's just, and it was electric. And basically what it does is it causes chain lightning, right, on strike, or a chance of chain lightning or something. It's not super clear because, again, it doesn't say. Apparently, some people strongly suggest you get a mod that tells you exactly what some of these items do, because sometimes the game does not really explain it well enough. But anyways, ukulele causes chain lightning. So now whenever you hit an enemy, you just see this lightning come up and hit a bunch of the enemies in the area, right? And if you stack ukuleles, which is really hard to do because it's like an uncommon item, right? You don't get it all the time. But if you do, it's crazy. But on top of that, right, there's other items that might cause like area of effect type of damage, right? So there's ones that you can like there's one, that gasoline, it causes combustion. So when you hit somebody, they go on fire. So now they have the fire condition. So imagine that you have fire and bleed, right? So you have multiple conditions stacking another on top of each other. And then if you stack, if you get an item called fuel tank or something like that, then you can cause ignition, right? Where people blow up. And that, you know, begins to hit other people. So if you hit one enemy, right, put them on fire and they blow up, and that causes other enemies to get put on fire and blow up, and so it causes a chain reaction. So it can really get insane with the effects and stuff like that, especially as you go to higher and higher levels. And then on top of all that, you have really interesting enemy designs. Now, I'm not gonna lie, I get frustrated a lot with some of these enemies, because it feels like certain characters are really not a good fit for certain enemies. Like, for instance, if there's a melee type of character, it's really hard for them to hit flying enemies, and there's quite a bit of flying enemies. Like, one of the basic, there's two basic characters that you get right at the box. The other ones you have to unlock. What's his name? Commando and Huntress. Commando, oh my gosh. I do like Commando more than Huntress. At least originally I did. I might be changing now, but originally I liked Commando more than Huntress. And, but Commando, I mean, at first, I'm not gonna lie, it felt pretty good. Like, it's kind of your standard. He has two pistols or whatever, two guns, and he's just boom, 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 boom. Very simple type of character. And I got pretty far with him, after I got a hang of the game. But once you start unlocking the other characters, Commando, it just, way too basic, way too simple, right? Like, now, I kind of want to go back to Commando, I do try and go back to Commando just to see, like, how good my skills are. Like, as you play the game more, you understand how to play the game, right? You understand, like, the importance of movement and mobility, kind of the same thing there. getting elevation, getting items at a good pace, you know, as you go through the game, understanding the map, so, you know, you're not wasting time looking for things that go on dead end or whatever, right? So I like to go back occasionally with Commando, but the problem with Commando is that because he's so basic, it's really difficult to enjoy playing with him unless you get some really good items. And really good items can pretty much fix any character. I don't want to say fix, but like, it can make any gameplay really enjoyable. But at the same time, because it's random, it can also be very frustrating when you're looking for a certain type of item, right? Because there's like defensive items, there's offensive items, there's healing items, movement-based items. So if your character is like slow, right, you might want to get some movement items, but it's hard to like come across them. So sometimes you might be, you know, having a good run in terms of like your skill, but you're just not getting the items that you like. And that part is frustrating. But at the same time, I've come to appreciate it because it does make the game very, very highly replayable, right? Like, you'd be like, okay, maybe next time I get better luck, right? And all the while, you're still improving with your skill. Like, I do notice myself getting way better at, like, being able to aim and shoot very well, understanding mobility, map, and even, like, item management. Because before, I didn't know what any of the items did. So I had to stop and read the items and, like, understand what that meant and stuff like that. But now that I have a better understanding of what most of these items are, like, when I pick up an item, like, first of all, sometimes you have to choose your item out of, like, a shop or something like that. And so before, I just didn't know what I was choosing, so I had to just choose one and learn about it. But now I know, okay, I can get this item that will be good for this character or whatever. But yeah, there's just a lot of complexity that goes into it, and I find it very stimulating to play this game. And on top of all that, right, that's not even where the fun ends with this game. On top of all that, you have a whole bunch of hidden, you know, stuff, right? Not just achievements, but, like, different maps you can go to that's not on a usual route. Because you have to figure out, like, there's like a whole lore to this game that's not explained at all, right? But you can piece together things because every item that you pick up has, like, a log and has lore attached to it. So if you go back and read the logs for the items or for the maps or the characters, then you can piece together some really interesting lore. See, this is the downside of having glasses. Like, stuff falls on my glasses now. I notice it. I'm just like, oh gosh. But anyways, but yeah, this makes it. Now, honestly, I didn't go back and read all the lore myself. Like, I read some of it initially, but weird. Okay, I don't know if you heard that, but their camera said I was being recorded. I'm just like, I'm just passing in front. Why are you? Anyways, yeah, like, when you there's a lot of items to unlock, right? And me, I used to like 100%ing games, especially back in my MMO days when I would try to find every achievement, every treasure or whatever. But I just learned it's not really worth it, at least not for me, because you know, you can get really stuck on trying to find a specific thing, and it just takes the fun out of things for me personally. So I didn't bother trying to piece everything together myself. I just went online and just looked up the lore, and it really helped me to get a whole other appreciation for the game, because the lore, oh my gosh, I don't know if I want to talk about it right now. Do I? Yeah, I do. I guess I'll go ahead and get into it. So the lore is fascinating, right? And this is going to be spoilers, right? So if you want to play the game, maybe skip past for the next, I don't know, 10 minutes or something like that. I need to start. I used to do this before. Let me do this again. I'm going to make a segment on this thing. So I'll stop here and then make a segment so you can skip past that segment if you don't want to hear spoilers for Risk of Rain 2 and Risk of Rain 1, really. Okay, so I made a segment. And this one is going to be just Risk of Rain 2 lore spoilers. So all about the story. So fair warning. So yeah, Risk of Rain 2. Well, first of all, it's the second one. The first one was a 2D game, and the lore was pretty interesting. So when I talk about the lore, I'm going to just talk about both games because, you know, all together. So as I understand it, it goes something like this: you had two brothers named Providence and Mithrix. At least that's the names that we learn about in the games. Not clear if that's what they call themselves, but Providence and Mithrix, and they seem to be some sort of creature, alien, like Cyclops type of thing. Not clear where they're from exactly, but apparently, yeah, one of these lore items says something along the lines of when they were younger, they used to play around. When they were kids, they used to play around. As kids do, and I'm not sure if their parents or somebody told them not to go into the gravity wells, right? You can play wherever you want, but don't go near the gravity wells. It's dangerous. right? And as kids do, they were playing near the gravity wells. And, you know, they like to throw stuff into the gravity wells to see what happens, different objects. They would just throw them in. Like, oh, wow. But Mithrix, he likes to throw living things into the gravity well. He likes to throw worms into the gravity well. But his brother, he really loved worms. So Mithrix would only throw worms in there when his brother was not close, was not nearby to see. And so one day, though, Providence, his brother, Providence's little brother, by the way, did see Mithrix throw worms into the gravity well. And I think that's how the lore ends, more or less. I'm not saying it exactly, but it's implied that they fought and fell into the gravity well. And lo and behold, yeah, that gravity well was a planet. A planet known as Petrichor 5. There we go. Petrichor 5 is the planet name. And so yeah, that alone is very interesting, because there's a lot that you learn right there, but it's a lot that you don't learn as well. And we never really learn exactly where they're from. Like, to not be playing in a gravity well, meaning that they must live outside of planets, right? To have been warned not to go into gravity well and to then get stuck in the gravity well on a planet. But at the same time, I don't think they live in space per se, because later on in the lore you hear that they get sick if they go through space, right? So as the story continues, something along the line of they try to get out of this planet, right, out of this gravity well, out of Petrichor 5, but they're stuck. So you know, they end up having to try a bunch of things. It's not clear if the planet was already dead, like if there's nothing living on it, or if they ended up, you know, killing everything on it, or what. I don't remember exactly what was. I think it was already barren, but they basically through a whole bunch of trial and error discovered, you know, apparently like what makes up the universe, at least according to them. And there was like four elements that make up the universe in this world, and that is blood, soul, design, and I always forget the last one. I think it's like glass or some shit, or bone. I don't know. But blood, design, soul. What did I just say? Blood, design, soul, and maybe glass. I don't know. I forget the last one. But yeah, the four elements. And Mithrix, he's really good at design, while Providence is really good at soul, right? So Mithrix uses his skill of design to design all sorts of, you know, inventions and beings to protect them and help them and try to help them get out of the planet. And so he creates guardians using, you know, very specific ratios of elements and things like that to create the guardian. But he's not very good at actually crafting stuff, actually creating it. Like whatever he creates, it's like weaker than his design tends to be. But Providence, his brother, is much better at actually crafting things, so he usually gives it to his brother to create. And so he gives the design of one of these super powerful guardians he was thinking about to his brother, and his brother ends up putting soul into it. And Mithrix is like, "What? Why'd you do this? You know, soul is for vermin." Like, he does not like soul mortal creatures, I guess. It seems as below him and frail and weak. What's the term I want to use here? Like, you can't guess what they're going to do, right? And so he doesn't like that. He's like, "Wow, why did you ruin my creation?" And the guardian is now so powerful, this living guardian that now knows about itself and whatever, is so powerful that Mithrix is not confident that he can actually defeat it. He's like, he told his brother, you know, it's unsafe to do these sorts of things, you know, it might be able to kill us, it might be able to, you know, defeat us. So instead of fighting it, he locked away this guardian, this soul infused guardian, into its own like prison realm essentially. And he's like, you know what, I'm gonna create the stuff from now on, don't worry about it, just hang back, right? And so after that point, Mithrix goes on to create his own guardians that are weaker than the original guardian, but at least they're loyal, and he really likes loyalty. So Providence, on the other hand, you know, he keeps trying to create things with soul, even though his brother doesn't like that. Eventually, at some point, Mithrix creates a teleporter, right? This thing that allows him to go to another place without actually having to cross a vast expanse of space, or what they call the Black Sea, and to avoid the sickness of crossing the Black Sea. So he's super happy at this point. He's like, look at this, we created this amazing thing. Look at my designs did. Now we can get out of here, and we can, you know, the universe is ours, right? We can do whatever we want. We can go help other people that are stuck in their gravity wells, or we can just own the whole thing. Like, we can take over the place. And so, but Providence seems to not be so excited about this. You would think he'd be excited about being able to leave this planet, but he's not. And so Mithrix is like, don't worry, it's safe, you know, it's good, you know, we can do whatever we want, you know, I'll go first, let's go. And so as soon as Mithrix goes to the teleporter, Providence moves in behind him and basically changes the destination and locks it, so that now Mithrix is stuck on the moon of Petrichor 5. So he traps his brother on the moon, and now Providence just basically throws away the key, locks that teleporter up, and throws away the key, or basically puts the key to his own soul or whatever. So nothing else can open that gate to get Mithrix off of the moon. So now Mithrix is like, oh, I see what you did there. All right. you know, don't do this, blah, blah, blah. And then the next couple lore is like, seems to kind of skip way ahead or whatever. But basically, Providence turns this planet, Petrichor 5, into a quote-unquote paradise, right? Where he's creating things with soul, it seems more so that he's taking things from other planets, right? He uses the teleporter to go to other planets and quote-unquote save creatures that are on the verge of extinction. And it seems that he's specifically saving creatures that seemed, at least according to Mithrix, that, you know, that are planet killers, that have destroyed their own planets. So, you know, he has like these salamander looking creatures that like breathe fire, and that seem to have turned their planet into a barren wasteland, ashland or whatever. And then he has these other creatures that are like these automatons of war. These look like floating bells. He has these other creatures that are like fungus or whatever, toads that, and then he has these other ones. I don't know, a bunch of different creatures that he's taking from other planets. And he brings them to his planet with the purpose of, and he doesn't let them leave, right? When he brings them there, you know, most of them, once they're there, they like praise Providence and stuff like that as the savior, as the hero, whatever. But some of them, like the harpies, are super smart and realize what's going on, and they want to leave, but they can't because Providence doesn't let them. Like, they're super smart. They're able to like create their own. I'm not sure if they created or took or like hacked. But basically, they seem to have created, I'll say created for now, their own freaking drones, like super drones. These powerful, they call it alloy companions or whatever, friends of the harpies. And these things are super powerful, but it doesn't allow them to get out. But one of the harpies, and I'm saying all this, but it's not clear if this is the exact order it goes in, because again, a lot of this lore is pieced together through just reading different logs and stuff like that. But one of the harpies seems to have caught Mithrix's eye. And so Mithrix, I should say, as Providence is creating this quote-unquote paradise, Mithras is, of course, trying to get off the moon. And so he tries to corrupt or, like, you know, speak to, you know, the different creations or creatures on Providence, or goodness, on Petrichor, and try to get them to his side. And he's successful to some extent. Some of them do begin to praise him. He gives them, like, these things called, like, beads of filthy and other like, lunar items that makes it more powerful or whatever, so that they can do his bidding. And, you know, the beads of filthy, like, he creates this place called, what's it called? Celestial room, I don't know. So some celestial place that's, like, supposed to be super, super special, and, like, you know, it's the one place he's not going to destroy when he eventually gets off the moon, right? He tells, you know, Providence at some point, you know, he's stuck there for, like, hundreds, if not thousands of years. And he's, like, gets real bitter and stuff like that. And he's like, you know, you're going to die eventually, Providence. And when you do, and you will die, I'm going to destroy everything. And so he's like, he's trying to corrupt these creatures to do his bidding and stuff like that. And this celestial place is supposed to be this one place where he's not going to destroy. So it's like, if you have these beads of filthy, you know, you'll be alive, theoretically. but all the other vermin, you know, all the other soul creatures, you're going to die. So at some point, Providence has his eye on Earth, right? As these creatures who get, who were able to, you know, humans were able to, in this world, in this universe, were able to create technology that allows them to, you know, travel through space. And that seems to be, you know, different than what the brothers were able to do. But, of course, as humans do, like in our own reality, they might be close to extinction. They might extinct themselves, right, in this world. Even though they have multi-planetary, even multi-system, you know, colonies and stuff like that, they might extinct themselves. So he's like, Providence is like watching them to see just in case if he needs to go in and quote-unquote save them, you know. And at some point, the humans have either brought or found some sort of like bison, some creatures on Saturn, on one of the moons of Saturn. A lot of people were poaching, you know, these bison, these creatures, and they seem to be going extinct, apparently, allegedly. And the Providence goes in and takes all of them, right? Now, the humans don't know who did it or what happened, but, like, in their logs, they see, like, oh, one time we had bison, and they're all getting poached, and at some point, they all disappeared somehow. So it's not, and, you know, they don't know why or how. And then, so that's kind of how the humans get roped into this. And Providence, or Mithrix, as he sees Providence eyeing these people and, like, taking their bison or whatever, he's like, ah, I see. I bet. I'm going to start with them. They're going to be the first ones I exterminate when I get out of here. And so, at some way, somehow, the humans, they have, like, you know, shipping... starships and stuff like that, and they're going on the way to, you know, one of their systems, one of their planets in another system. But on the way there, they get this beacon, they get this call to Petrichor 5, and it's weird because they've mapped a lot of the planets in their star systems, in their local star systems, but Petrichor 5 doesn't seem to be on any star maps. And so their ship, the UES Contact Light, you know, is going towards this planet because it got this beacon. So, like, okay, what's going on? And what's interesting here is that the logs are, like, redacted, partially redacted. So it said, oh, we got this beacon to go to this planet. And it's like, psh, it doesn't really say who or what or why, but they go there for some reason. And on the way there to the planet, or maybe it's on the way back. It's not clear. It's not super clear if they got there and then got off and picked up what they were supposed to pick up. Some people have pieced together that they were looking for the teleporters, because, again, maybe they found one on Saturn. Some people have pieced together maybe it's the Harpy. Like, my personal theory here, and I'm only putting this here now, even though I haven't told the whole story, because it kind of, you know, kind of have to see how this happened. But my theory is that the Harpies, you know, because they have this map called Siren's Call in the actual game, in Risk of Rain 2. In Siren's Call, there's a bunch of Harpies there, and there's like a whole bunch of ships, a bunch of different ships that are, you know, crashed in this area, in this map. So it seems to be that the Sirens the Harpies are like sirens, right? They create beacons or whatever, calling to ships to go there so that they can try and take their parts and build their own ship to get out of there. And so my theory is that one of the Harpies, let me back up a second. So actually, in the actual lore, one of the Harpies does start working for Mithrix. And this Harpy eventually becomes to be known as the Heretic. Seemingly because they, you know, are working for Mithrix, and Providence does not like that. So he goes and kills her and like spreads her body in like four pieces all across the planet. Like he did not like that. So he called her the Heretic. But before she dies, she basically does work for Mithrix and creates like different things for him. And she's really good at it. And so he's like, all right, this is going to be my key right here. But at some point, somehow, she appears on the contact light, on the U.S. contact light, while it's on the way or near, you know, Petrichor 5. And as soon as she gets on the ship, she runs, she books it, you know, for the navigation area, for the, you know, the control panels or whatever. And she tries to, you know, hook things up in order to co-opt the ship. And she kills Captain or somebody, I don't know, pilot or whatever. So she kills somebody on the ship, maybe probably a couple people. But as soon as she tries to, you know, get close behind her, Providence pops up on the ship and causes mayhem. Like, basically destroys the whole ship and kills her and, you know, rips her apart. Stuff like that. So that's Risk of Rain. That's the start of Risk of Rain 1, where Providence pops up on the ship, or Heretic pops up on the ship. Then Providence pops up on the ship, destroys the whole thing, and then the ship crashes on the planet. So that's how Risk of Rain 1 starts, where you're one of these people on a ship that just crashed down, and you have to, you know, get off this planet. So you get all the items, you know, you pick up a whole bunch of items on the way, pick up some other folks. Like one of the characters is Acrid, this creature that's like, not clear if the humans created her or found her or whatever, but she was captured on the human ship. And at some point you can find her and you know, unlock her or whatever, have her join her team. But yeah, anyways, so the humans get super powerful, but because they have all these powerful items that was on the shipping container ship, and they get powerful enough to essentially kill Providence. And that's how Risk of Rain 1 ends. And so in Risk of Rain 2, you know, I'm not even super clear exactly what happened, because apparently they are successful. They kill Providence and they take the ship or part of the ship that's remaining, and they get off the planet. But it's not clear what happens then, because in Risk of Rain 2, it starts off by another ship, UES Safe Travels, where they're supposedly on their rescue mission to pick up the contact light, because the contact light never came back. So even though in the first game they apparently leave the planet, in the second game, you know, they're lost, like nobody knows where they are. And so the UES Safe Travels comes in and is like, okay, we gotta come, you know, find a ship and get them off the planet. And what's also funny is, like, they say it's a rescue mission, but, you know, one of the captain of the Safe Travels, one of the logs mentions how the Safe Travels ship is not meant for rescue missions. Like, it's a ship that's meant for something else. It's not really clear exactly what, but he adds a bunch of guns and weaponry to the ship Because he's like, I ain't going here blind. I'm not going here, you know, naked. So he's like, this is not a typical rescue ship, and I'm gonna need some weapons. So he gets some weapons, and you know, goes to the planet. And so, the Risk of Rain 2 starts off with you coming off the ship and landing on the planet, and now you have to, you know, find the contact light and find any survivors from the first game. So that's when you begin picking up a bunch of logs and all this other stuff. But the lore continues for this game where you, in Risk of Rain 2, basically, I haven't got this far, but you know, I was watching the lore, but you can eventually beat Mithrix, right? Where you get all your items together, get super powerful, you go up to the moon, and then you fight Mithrix, you defeat him. But right before he dies, right, he blows up the planet, or I'm sorry, blows up the moon. But right before the moon explodes, you know, you find one of the ships. It's apparently, it may have been a rescue pod or a escape pod from the contact light. Oh, first of all, when you first get on the moon, right, you see what this ship that apparently may have been from the prior occupants, from the prior human mission, but it's like trapped behind like a boundary, so you can't actually get to it. So you have to defeat Mithrix in order to get that ship. But when you do defeat Mithrix and you go back to the ship, this moon is exploding, a whole bunch of things happening, but also these creatures start popping up. These creatures that you've never seen before. And there's already been a lot of freaking weird creatures from this game. Like, I skipped this, but like one of the other creatures that you see in the game is these imps. And it's like these demonic creatures that are freaking terrifying. They teleport in and like attack super fast. But what's interesting about them, before I continue this, the end of the game, what's interesting about the imps, but is according to their lore, they got stuck on the planet as well, right? They came, they're like these demonic, super powerful creatures, and they will go to different planets and basically like defeat them and take them over, colonize them in a sense. But when they got to Petrichor 5, they got their ass beat, essentially, right? Providence, again, this is before he's dead, before. Providence beat their ass. And he did something to where it made it so that they couldn't teleport out. They could only partially teleport to like an in-between realm, but they couldn't go back to their hell realm or whatever they're from in order to contact their imp overlord or whatever. So in their lore, they were like, oh man, you know, we tried to defeat him, but we realized that we wouldn't be able to do it without completely dying, without being exterminated on this planet, and we'd never be able to get back to the imp overlord. And so it's interesting because like when you kill them in this game, and apparently when you kill them in the first game, they seem to die, like you see their body, right? And that's true for most, like even in this game, when you kill most things, their body is just like lying on the floor, like it doesn't like go away, like most games. That's an interesting touch. And when you kill the imps in this game, Risk of Rain 2, they don't physically die. Like you don't see their body like fall down. What you see is them getting sucked into some sort of portal, right? Some sort of like black hole portal, which is crazy. It's a cool effect, but it's very interesting lore wise because now I'm skipping back ahead to continue the story. When you're on the moon, when you defeat Mithrix and you're about to leave the moon, right, you're trying to get out, you see these creatures pop up. They pop up and it's like and they have like these black hole looking attacks, and these things are called Void Reavers. They like these crab like creatures, and they seem to be trying to capture stuff, right? Anything they have this black bubble type of thing, and if you get captured in that, or anything that gets captured in that, whether it's another creature or an object, it gets sucked away, right? And it turns out that if you get captured by one of these things, or even if they die, because when they die, they explode into this large dark hole looking bubble. It looks a little bit different than the imp's bubble, so it's not super clear if it's the same thing or if it's related, but they disappear into a black hole type of bubble. And if you get captured in there or killed by them, it says, you know, await your sentence at the end of time, right? And so it turns out these void weavers, what their deal is they're from a whole other dimension. They're from this dimension called the void, where it's kind of like in between dimensions in this universe. And they go around the universe capturing things, capturing people and things, and just putting them in bubbles, right? Turning them into some crazy goo, where the creature inside the bubble is still alive as goo. Like they can think and stuff like that, but they're, you know, stuck. And this is where things get super fucking crazy. So this is gonna be a little bit of an existentialism trigger warning. If you don't like existentialism, like simulation theory, stuff like that, you might want to skip ahead like 3 minutes or something. But it turns out the void reavers, or the void creatures, right, when they stick you in one of these bubbles, these void bubbles, you're stuck in what essentially is a simulacrum, a simulation, right, where they're testing you over and over and over again, to see, you know, all sorts of things, where they're trying to learn things from you. So they have this crazy, like, you know, what do you call it? I've got the word for it, but this Cthulhu type of stuff, you know, these giant creatures at the end of time type of stuff, where this one creature called the Voidling, is this big crab, giant eye on a crab type of thing. Whenever it looks at you, it feels like it's taking stuff from you. It kind of gets you get stuck in time, like as you're looking at it, like your whole sense of time gets all out of whack, and it's like seems to be taking something from you, but it's not clear what. And so in the void, if you get stuck in one of these bubbles, they put you in this like simulation where you're like going, you feel like you're, you know, like real life where you're going through things. But whenever you die, you just start back over. And there's even some lore where one of the creatures who seemed to have gotten out of there called, and eventually becomes a hero you can play. I haven't unlocked him yet. He's in a DLC, but it's called the, I forgot his name exactly. Void something, or Void Corrupted something. But he seemed to have been a commando. Commando seems to be like more like a class rather than a specific person. But he seemed to have been a commando that got captured before in one of these bubbles and got corrupted, right, into a void-like creature. And typically, what void-like creature, like when you're in the bubble, they have you performing these simulations over and over again. It's not just to learn from you, it's also to corrupt you. It's also to turn you into a creature of the void, right? Because they have like these void reavers, and they have these other things called like scrappers or something like that, where they're like regular creatures, but they've been completely corrupted. So most creatures, when they get corrupted, they begin to, you know, be one with the void, and they enact the void's, you know, plans and stuff like that. But when you're in these simulations, it's trying to corrupt you to become one. But this one guy who eventually gets out of there, you know, is like, you know, I think he has like a lore where he felt like he escaped, and he even got back to Earth, and he had a whole family and stuff like that. One of his kids died and stuff like that. Had a regular life. And then when he died, he wakes back up in the fucking bubble in another simulation. And he's like, he's going crazy. He's like, I'm not even sure if this is real. Like when I escaped. And so that's like terrifying. And one of the lore for the void place is like, you go deeper. Like there's no way out of the void. You just go deeper, deeper, deeper. It's like terrifying, but I love it. You know, I love that type of stuff. And so my theory here is that the game itself may take place in one of these simulations. I know some people don't like this type of thing, and some people say, oh no, you know, that's not the case at all. But in my opinion, the reason why this works is because whenever you die in the game, right, you get like a message. It says like, oh, that was a terrible death, you know. these smart ass little messages. And my idea is that something is like you get stuck in a void yourself, and you're like constantly, you know, looping through. You're trying to get out of it. And one of the reasons for this as well is because after you beat Mithrix, after you get off the moon, the moon itself, before it explodes, the moon itself gets put in one of these bubbles. Because it turns out, lower down in the void, it gets bigger. And they have a level of the void that's called the planetarium, where it's this big-ass stage, and there's a bunch of planets in the fucking void. In this map. It's just insane. I haven't been there again yet, personally, when my playthrough yet, but I've seen a lot of the videos of it, and it's like, it's amazing. But yeah, so to continue the story, after you beat Mithrix, you escape the moon. The moon, before it explodes, it gets sucked into one of these void bubbles type of things. And then now you're fighting these void creatures, and you eventually find a portal to go to the void. And so now you're in the void, and you have to you basically blow the place up. You basically make the place unstable and free a bunch of items and people from these void bubbles. And then you go deeper into the void through more portals until you find the voidling, and then you fight the voidling. And the Voidling has like a 3-stage boss battle. Super crazy shit. And as you're fighting it, every time you defeat it, it goes deeper into the void. And so you have to follow it deeper into the void and defeat it again. You do this 3 times. So at the end of the game, once you've defeated this Voidling like 3 times, now there's another portal that says to leave. And then when you do that, when you leave, it says something like, fate unknown, and that's how the game ends. At least so far, it's still ongoing. Like, they're still making DLC and stuff like that. So yeah, there's a lot of shit going on with this game, a lot of stuff, and there's some other lore that I probably missed or forgot about. But all that to say, like, there's a lot of stuff going on with this game. It's super interesting lore wise. And I've been just watching videos of it, like, the past couple of days, like, over the week. Like, I don't play games much during the week, because I got, you know, work to do. But, you know, on the side, as I'm working, I'm, like, having the video going, I'm, like, watching this stuff. So, yeah, that's the lore for Risk of Rain. Risk of Rain 1 and 2. And I'm super interested to see where it's going to go. Turns out that the people who made this game, it's like 2 people who made this game, 2 indie devs, they sold it to the Gearbox publisher or whatever. So I'm really hoping Gearbox does this game justice and continues the lore, because it's so interesting, and I'm really hoping it's gonna have some cool, you know, continuation of the lore. But yeah, that's that there. So I'm going to continue talking about the game itself. Now that I explained the whole lore. But that's one of the things that super interests me about this game. So even when I'm not playing, I'm like learning more about the game. It just grips me right now. But I'm going to end this segment and then continue talking. Okay. As I was thinking about it, I was like, there's not much more I can talk about with the game, to be honest with you. Because at this point, I'm just trying to get better. I'm just trying to get good now. So I've unlocked a few heroes or characters or whatever. And I'm just enjoying it. I'm just trying to get better. Sometimes I get frustrated because I'm like, golly, this game gets hard. Like, I haven't even played on the hardest setting. I just played on the normal setting, the Chance of Rain or whatever it's called. Like, it's Drizzle, Rainstorm. And then the harder one is Monsoon. And then it gets even harder from there. You can play different freaking game modes. There's one called like Eclipse, where every time you beat the game, you loop again, and you know, everything gets harder after that. Like, every time you beat the game with that same character, the next game you play gets even harder. So it just keeps on going to like Eclipse 8 or something like that. It's crazy. So I haven't been... I'm not nowhere close to that. I still haven't beat the game on like a normal mode with one hero yet, one character. So I have a long way to go. Long way to go. I'm not even sure if I'm ever going to play Monsoon or Eclipse or whatever. I just want to try to beat the game with like a couple characters and call it a day. And even beat the game is like on quotes there, because like when do you actually beat the game? Like you can loop it ad infinitum, it seems, and go like every time you go to another map, that's another stage, right? So technically you can quote unquote beat the game on stage 7, right? Because you go through like five or six maps I think it is, and then the sixth map is the moon, and then you fight the boss on the moon. Or I might have that wrong. It might be 6 and then 7, but either way it's like 5, 6 or 7 stages, right? But you can loop it, so instead of going to the moon, right, that teleporter, you can switch the destination so that it goes to back to the beginning. And so a lot of people, like, there's some achievements that you get, like some the characters have different skills or different loadouts that you can unlock, and some of those loadouts require you to beat the game or to beat like 20 stages. So think about that. That means you have to go get the loop like 3, 4, 5 times or whatever. I'm just like, what? I just barely got through 2 loops last time. Earlier today with one of the new characters. I was like super proud of myself. And on top of that, I went to like they call it the Allure Fine or whatever. Basically, the first guardian I mentioned before was kind of an Allure part. So, but that super powerful guardian that mentioned in Allure, you can unlock him. You have to defeat him or her. I don't know. You have to defeat them, and then you can use them now, and as an item. It's insane. Like super powerful. It helped a lot in my playthrough, but I barely got to like stage, I don't know what it was, 13, 14 or something like that. I think it's like stage 12. But like, yeah, I barely got through 2 loops, and it was extremely difficult, and I died before I even had the chance to do it again. So I'm nowhere close to being able to, you know, go that far. When I was looking online, some people got to like stage like 99 or some bullshit crazy shit, and the time is going this whole time, right? So if you manage to play like for an hour, you know, that means you probably, like for me at least, if I one run, usually I get to like stage 4 or 5 pretty consistently. Well, it depends on the character, because like these some characters, I got a new character, and I like the character, but I'm barely able to get to stage 5 with them. Like, I'm not that good with them. But some of my other characters, I can get to stage 6 or 7 or whatever. And it can be very difficult. But, like, I forgot what I was going to say. But anyways, like, yeah, the time. So the game gets harder as time goes along, but it's not strictly just about time, right? It's also about the number of items you get, because remember, those items make things super, like, very different. So if you try to rush, for instance, and don't really pick up much items, you're going to get outscaled no matter how fast you go. Like, you're going to get demolished. But if you go too slow, right, and just take so long to pick up your items and things like that and go to the next stage, then you're also going to get outscaled. So you have to kind of balance how fast you're going and how long you're taking to get items. So that's an interesting touch there. So some people recommend that you spend like no more than 5 minutes per stage. I have not been able to do that yet. Like, it still takes me at least 7 minutes, you know, to get off a stage, maybe 8 or 9. But yeah, some people can like do it in like 2 to 5 minutes. Like, there's For freaking Commando, one of his loadout items, to unlock it, you have to freaking defeat the first boss in 5 minutes. And I'm just like, what? I just can't. I can't. Not yet. But yeah, it's so interesting of a game. I really want to get a lot better with it, because I would love to be able to like loop a couple times, defeat the boss, and do all this other stuff. and see all the, like, I haven't unlocked all the items yet. There's a whole bunch of other items I have to get. And then I haven't even gotten the DLC. The DLC is the Void stuff I was just talking about in the spoiler segment. So I don't even know if I'm going to, I'm going to get the DLC. Like, I played a little bit of it because when I first got the game, or when I first played the game earlier, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever, I was playing with my friend and he had the DLC, and that was just crazy. It was wild. But I've been playing without the DLC because even the DLC is like super cheap. It's like $3-4, but it makes it a lot more complicated. So a lot of the advice I saw online was like, play without the DLC first, and then once you get a hang of it, then get the DLC, because it does make things a lot more complicated. So I've been doing that. But yeah, I just want to get good, man. So yeah, that's the game I've been playing. That's Risk of Rain 2. Super fascinating stuff. Now my mouth is dry, so I'm probably not going to talk about hip hop like right now. Probably just going to end it here. I'll just say I find myself really enjoying games that are, you know, like I said before, complex, that has a lot of things going on. But not too much, because it's something that even go crazier. But yeah, this has been giving me appreciation for roguelikes. So I might even try a couple other roguelikes I've been looking at. Like there's even one that's like some more magic based ones that are 2D, but they have super interesting magic systems where it seems like you can like craft your own magic. Like the different effects, at least, like how they trigger different things. So I might look at that. What else? I've also been enjoying the practice of getting better. That has taught me a lot about, you know, patience and consistency. This is why I've been letting myself play games more, because it has been teaching me like real life lessons for real. I think I've mentioned before, like, I've always been struggling with consistency and having patience and getting to a point where I feel like I'm really good. But when you play a game, they get you, especially a really good game that you enjoy the game loop, then you can learn that sort of thing, right? Like, I have to learn patience when I'm playing. Like, I can't rush in and do certain things, but also I have to, like, similar to what I was saying with the magic game, I have to, like, I can't be too patient. Like, I can't be like, oh, overanalyzing and be like, oh, should I get this? Should I get that? Should I, you know, I have to like kind of make a decision. Not too hastily, but not too quickly either, or not too, not take too long on it either. So it has helped me a lot to make decisions on a faster pace, as well as, you know, not get too hung up on failure, because I fail a lot, I die a lot, you know, but half the time I don't get mad. Sometimes I do, because I'm like, oh, that shouldn't have happened. But it is teaching. Shout out to Zach, you know, his article about failure. Like, I've known that for a long time, like the value of failure and learning from failure and stuff like that, and seeing it not even as failure but as a learning, you know, kind of thing. But it has been difficult to like absorb that in different aspects of my life. Like, I've been able to absorb that in terms of like writing and putting out some types of content, but there's still a lot of stuff that I don't do simply because I'm afraid to fail still. But games like this helps me with that, I think, to where like I can see how far the, like, it's very similar to my life. Like, I have these crazy ambitions and crazy things I want to do, and crazy level of skill and just ability that I want to be at, but I'm nowhere near there yet. And you see that in a game where, you know, you have these super skilled people that are treating this as like an esport that can do some amazing things, and it can play this on the highest difficulties and all this other stuff. But in order to get there, right, it's just daily, or not daily for me, I'm only playing this on the weekends, but consistent practice, right? Just trying it, failing, learning. And so it has been giving me appreciation And I think an ability to be able to really internalize that lesson. So that's been pretty cool. And maybe that's just an excuse to just play games, but I feel like this is a good excuse. You know, we give ourselves excuses for all sorts of things. You know, might as well give a good one. especially if it's for something that, you know, is fun to do. And yeah. So I guess I'll end it there. Check out Risk of Rain 2 if you haven't already. And if you do, hit me up. I would love to play. I'd love to play together. You know, even though I got a little bit of skill now, you know, I don't mind playing with some new folks and showing them the ropes. And growing together, you know, because I know it's going to take me a while to get anywhere. But it's important to learn how to enjoy the journey. Right, that's another lesson I've been trying to internalize more and more, is learning how to enjoy the journey. So, yeah, hope we do that together, we can do that together. If you want to play Risk of Rain 2 or other games, you know, I've been open to other games too. There's other stuff I've been looking at, but this is my current fixation. Okay, yeah, that's it for real. So, as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for learning with me and going on this long-ass bender about games. And don't be afraid to be radical. Don't be afraid to be revolutionary. Keep being awesome. Love yourself. Play some games. Have fun. Enjoy. And have a great day. See ya. Bye-bye.